Thank you for listening to the Shanghai Community Fellowship Podcast. To find out more about the SCF community, listen to sermons, and upcoming events, visit us at shanghaifellowship.org. So here we are, still in our Lent series. We started this Lent series a few weeks ago now, and we've been calling it Grace Essentials, learning how grace unlocks the cross. Now today, Josh, our worship director at SCF, he and I are going to be having a conversation about some really dynamic passages, parts of the Bible, that help us to see grace a little more clearly. And when I say help us to see, we're going to discover how a biblical concept or idea of light, because God is light, really helps us to see, increases our vision, and to see grace in our lives as well. So I think these passages, these parts of the Bible that we're going to be reading today, are going to help us do that. And Josh and I are going to have a conversation about how we see light and grace and vision in these particular parts of the Bible. So we're going to be looking at a letter written by the Apostle Paul to the church in Ephesus called the Letter of Ephesians. And we're going to start with that one. And then from there, we're going to move on to the story of how ancient Israel's greatest king was called to become the king. Really great story in 1 Samuel 16, and we're going to take a look at that. And then we're going to finish by looking at a story from the life of Jesus about a man who was born blind, receives the light, because Jesus is the light, and also receives his vision as well. So there's some things in there. We'll unpack some of that. And we're really, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to get started with this letter to the Ephesians, to the Ephesian church. And so this is Paul writing, and we're starting in chapter 5. There are 6 chapters, so you'll want to maybe get a look at all 6 of those sometime and see what's happening. We're going to start with chapter 5. That's where this particular part comes from, chapter 5. All right, so we're going to look at chapter 5 of Ephesians, beginning with verse number 3. And I'm just going to go ahead and read that, Ephesians 5, verses 3 to 14. So Paul's writing, he says, "But among you there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality, or of any kind of impurity, or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. Nor should there be obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving. For of this you can be sure, no immoral, impure, or greedy person, such a person is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of such things, God's wrath comes on those who are disobedient. Therefore, do not be partners with them. For once you were in darkness, but now you are the light in the Lord. Live as children of light, for the fruit of the light consists in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. And find out what pleases the Lord. Have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. It's shameful even to mention what the disobedient do in secret. But everything exposed by the light becomes visible, and everything that is illuminated becomes a light. This is why it is said, 'Wake up, sleeper, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you.'" So again, like I said at the beginning, we're going to look at these passages, and beginning with this writing from Paul, how do we see light and vision or sight and grace in these words that Paul has written? Now, you probably heard me say as I was reading, the word light appears there quite a bit. So I'm going to start, Josh, just toss that over to you and say, how are you seeing light and vision and grace and the words that Paul is writing here?
You know, when you're reading the passage, one of the very first things that popped out to me was in verse 13, it says, "Everything exposed by the light becomes visible, and everything that is illuminated becomes a light." And I thought for a second, like, what does that mean? Like, and then I remembered, like, well, we see something every single day that is an example of something that is illuminated and becomes a light. It's the moon. Mm-hmm. Like, people are like the moon. The moon itself does not give light, but it reflects the light of the sun. And I thought to myself, I was like, oh, what an amazing like analogy that Paul used, that like that we ourselves are not the source of light, but we are reflectors of light. And in that sense too, like we're the, so if you connect that to something like grace, we're not the ones who are the source of grace, but we're the ones who reflect God's grace. And so when we see the light, and when we see that and the light hits us, it permeates our being and it reflects to others. And that's the amazing quality of light, is that like light doesn't like just stay someplace, but the light reflects and bounces off. And if you relate that to the characteristics of God, namely like in this situation, His grace. His grace doesn't just hit you and stay with you, but it's like light where it hits and reflects off you and bounces off you, and the character of God becomes you, and it bounces off of you to others.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just a really cool thing that Paul wrote there. And it's just like a seemingly passing scripture, but like it's so insightful to how a life in Christ should be like, or a life that like sees the light should
be. You know, I thought the same thing. I thought, you know, because as you listen, if you were listening as we were reading, you know, they're some really strong words, you know, especially in the first few verses, you know, idolaters and, you know, and all this, the sins that are mentioned there. You know, I mean, those are the big, heavy words that would really get your attention, right? But then kind of not buried, but kind of in there is this, you know, what you're talking about, right? You know, that we reflect light as well. And, I thought too, because as you keep reading, you realize that light not only exposes the darkness, as he says, or the bad things, right? But it also exposes the good things.
Right.
I also thought of a word picture too, and I thought, you know, if you walk into a kitchen that's dark, you turn on the light, you know, you might see cockroaches, you know, scrambling, you know, and that's a bad thing, right? Oh, this is a dirty place. But it also, the light would reveal how clean the kitchen is.
Right.
He's, wow, this is really clean in here, you know, so, right? I mean, so light has that feature of not only showing where things need to be cleaned up, but it also has the feature of showing, here's what's really good here.
And that's good for us to know, too, because depending, there's a lot of philosophies on this, but, like, depending on how you stand on the nature of mankind, it's like some people feel that mankind is, like, good innately. Some people feel that, like, total depravity, we are nothing without God. And, you know, wherever you fall on that line, though, what this does show that somewhere in the core of mankind is that is God has woven in the fabric of us the ability to receive and reflect His goodness, His light, His grace. So regardless of where you fall in line of like the nature of man, woven inside the us in how He created us is the ability to reflect God. And I think that's a really encouraging thing for anyone, regardless of where they're in their faith, especially young Christians and people who are just new to the faith. Like you, God has woven you to be able to receive Him and then reflect Him to others, and that's a great thing, because people so often get so far away from that. It's kind of like the story of the prodigal, who has forgotten who he is.
Paul here, I mean, he got specific about the things that happen in the dark, but he also gets specific about things that happen in the light. So he says, like, he says, you know, the things that are exposed by the light, the good things, for example, he says, are thanksgiving, and like you're talking about goodness is there, righteousness, truth. He uses all these words to say, when you're in the light will expose these things too. Hey, this is a good person. You know, this is a person who's right relationship with God. Yeah. That also gets exposed.
Right. And there's one thing too, is like Paul deliberately uses the word fruitless. You know, light produces fruit, but darkness produces fruitlessness. And you know, I think we need to like we need to highlight that a bit, because the truth is like so many things that the world is trying to share or make people value are fruitless things, and we need to make light that like, and bring back the value of fruitful things, the things that have real fruit, and that's what Paul's calling us to, is like, guys, darkness, it doesn't produce fruit. There's no value in it. But the goodness, things like goodness and righteousness and truth, those produce real fruit. Those produce things of real value. And I think that's like one of the key functions of the church. I think Paul's calling us, the church in Ephesians, back to that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you mentioned a minute ago, you know, there's mixed into those really heavy words, you know, that really stand out in the text. You know, there's something, again, not insignificant, but I mean, right. It kind of gets in there. And one of those for me was in verse 10, where he says that, you know, basically every generation, or we must discover what pleases the Lord.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, every generation of Christians has to discover what pleases the Lord. So it's like he doesn't give a detailed list, you know, like do this, and here's a checklist, go, you know, he just says, hey, this is just, you know, there's goodness, there's thanksgiving, yeah. You know, there's truthfulness, and right, all these kind of broad, you know, and good, right? I mean, meaningful things that you'll see in the light. But then, like, it's like, hey, every generation, take that and discover how we use that and apply that, you know, right here, right. You know, among my own generation and among you know, people that, you know, and the generational thing is significant to me because,
yeah,
you know,
me too.
Yeah, you know, hey, we're both getting older.
Yeah.
But I'm a little farther ahead than you.
Well, I get you though, because like I'm turning 40 soon. Mike Howe and I, we're both around the same age. And I'm at the age where I'm seeing like multiple generations inside the church.
Mm-hmm.
Where like the younger people who are young, or people who are younger than myself, are not coming to leadership, or they're coming growing into young adults who, and they're ready to become leaders, they're ready to become like servant leaders,
yeah.
And take a significant role in those, in not just church, but in industry, in life.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it, I see it.
Yeah.
Like, but that's what's really cool is that with each generation, like you're saying, there are specific things that we need to do to find out what pleases the Lord. I'm not quite sure 100% what those are, but like a mandate of ours is to find out what those things are.
Yes, yes, exactly right. Yeah, yeah, to go out and discover what pleases the Lord, and you know, for you personally or me personally, but also for every generation.
Right.
You know that the time that we live in. You know, I mean, people. You think about, you know, the high school kids who are graduating this spring, or right. University kids, I call them kids, you know, are graduating. I mean, they're graduating in the middle of a pandemic.
Right.
Right. You know, so how do you discover the goodness of the Lord if you're graduating from university right. in the middle of a pandemic, you know? But that's kind of, like you said, kind of on them to go and discover that.
You know, yeah, like, you know, God bless them because... it's hard to though, but like they're entrusted with that particular mm-hmm. with this passage, they're entrusted with that mandate in the time such as this.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You know, God doesn't allow things to happen without them being able to find out. I think there's something specific that this yeah. that this generation, that people now, our current church needs to know. What is something that we need to find out about God mm-hmm. in this particular stance that
yeah.
will help us carry. And that we should translate to the next generation or going forward
mm-hmm.
with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that what we can take from this whole crazy mm-hmm. thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read an analogy, you know, from this passage, and the writer was saying that Christians are people like standing in a spotlight. You know, you're right in the center of that spotlight. The
yeah.
brightness of the light is right on that person, that believer. And now you can kind of see on the edge of us, usually the spotlight, the light becomes kind of diffused, you know, as you get out of the center. But there's always a clear mark between where the light stops and then there's darkness.
Right.
Yeah, so you got those in the light and the spotlight on stage, and those who are sitting in the audience, you know, in darkness. And, you know, we bring that light. We bring that
yeah,
light
absolutely.
And invite people to come out of the darkness and step into the light as we have done, and at the, you know, at the same time, there's, I think what grace does, it allows us to know that we are invited, that there is a place,
mm-hmm.
but it also it's not contrary to grace to say there is a line where the light separates from the darkness,
right.
You know, and the invitation is to come out of the darkness and
right.
the light. Right?
And then, so the question is like, what is what's the responsibility of the church then, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this stance, I think like, so, you know, this passage speaks about, so live as children of light. Like, you're a dad, I'm a dad.
Mm-hmm.
And like, kids can be there are things that you need to teach them.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't know some of these things. And as a church, like, we often have to speak to these. We have to be mindful of who we're speaking to and who we minister to.
Mm-hmm.
That we're trying to impart light upon these people. Like, in the same way that I try to impart discipline and encouragement and teaching them what's good and right and
mm-hmm.
wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the mandates of the church that comes along with being in the light.
Mm-hmm.
Is like, well, people don't really know how to react to the light.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to teach that to them as well.
Cause,
but we have to let them know that they are children of light. They're not children of darkness.
Yeah.
And right. And that, I think that's one of the biggest things is people, our church, not our church, but church in general, often has difficulty with seeing non-believers or new believers as children of light, and they have these unrealistic expectations upon people right away, and I think it's our duty to help raise these children of light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
making disciples. Hey, that's great. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's these next are really two stories, from the Bible. And I love a good story, and the Bible has lots of great stories, true stories, and. But this one comes from the story of how Israel's greatest king, his name is David, actually becomes king, right? And you can go to 1 Samuel chapter 16, first verses, and you can read that story there. So we're not going to read it for you today because it would be a long reading. So I hope you'll go but we'll kind of summarize the story for you. And Israel has already had a king. His name is Saul. It didn't work out very well, and so in chapter 16 and verse 1 of 1 Samuel, God says, I'm going to choose a king. I'm going to choose a king for my people, and he asked Samuel to basically be part of the process. I want you to go to Jesse's house because I'm going to choose one of Jesse's sons to be the king of my own choosing. And really, I think that first verse, I think there's an emphasis there. I mean, God is really making the point. I'm choosing somebody, right? I'm choosing this guy. And so he goes, and some of you may know the story already. If you don't know the story, again, I would just encourage you to go read it because it really is, it's a great story. So because Jesse has 8 sons, and Samuel, who is a prophet, man who speaks for God, a very godly person, was involved in Saul's becoming king. And now he's going to be involved in the second king of Israel. He already knows that God is going to choose one of Jesse's sons. And so there's the dinner, and Jesse brings out, the sons. Yeah. It starts out with the oldest one. Yeah. And Samuel, and in that story, we read that, Samuel just figures, well, that's got to be it, right? He's big, strong, oldest child. It's got to be him. And God, very strongly says to him, it's not him. And so Samuel just goes one by one. It gets all through all 7 sons in order, and God is just saying to Samuel, it's none of these guys, and to the point where Samuel has to ask Jesse, do you have any more, anybody else, because it's not any of these guys. And he said, well, we got this other, they got the youngest, and he's in the shepherd, we'll call him in here. And of course, he comes in, and it's David, and he's the youngest, and he's out in the field, and again, kind of reading a little bit into that text, he never got invited even to that dinner. So I don't know what maybe they thought of
right,
David.
Seriously, right?
Yeah, it's like he didn't even get invited.
The greatest prophet
yeah.
of that generation comes to your home, you're going to get everyone dressed up.
Exactly.
And
right.
He's like, no, he left him out in the field.
He's out in the field. He didn't even get
it. It says one or two things. It says something about Jesse, and maybe this is not the one. Or it says David's his mind wasn't into caring about. Those guys, whatever it was, the situation is why is this guy not here? It's the greatest
Israel's
prophet.
Famous prophet is here.
Shows up at your door and you're out in the woods.
Yeah, you're out in the woods. I can't be bothered. That's a good point. You think it might have been Jesse. It could have been David.
Yeah.
I don't want to bother. A famous prophet. Who cares, right? Well, anyways, one of the verses that, I say it's famous because, at least I'm familiar with it.
Yeah.
And one that draws me time and time again, and I've heard other people refer to it, that sentences or lines that come from the story is at the moment that Samuel figures it's the oldest son.
Yeah.
All right, so he's just absolutely sure. And God kind of, like, it's almost like a gentle rebuke of Samuel. Like, you know, you're wrong. It's not him. But this is the line that he says. The Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height, speaking of Jesse's oldest son, for I have rejected him. The Lord, this is the line, the Lord does not look at the things that people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. I mean, wow, I mean, isn't that just a powerful thing? And it's one of those statements that its application goes well beyond the story, right?
Yeah, you know, like when we read that passage and bringing it back to light, you know, it's made me think about light differently, or God's light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like our understanding of light is just like to see things or like to be illuminated, but God's light is so much more than that. God's light is something that sees beyond like the outside.
Mm.
And I'm still wrapping my head around that to this moment since I started looking at these passages, because we as a church, we as people should start trying to understand, what does that really mean then? Like, how do we begin to look at people?
Mm-hmm.
Or how does our understanding of this kind of light, how should that affect the way we just interact with anybody?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in this way too, God's light does not just reflect and come off, but it somehow penetrates and looks past the outer layer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is just astounding, because, you know, it's kind of like, I feel that one day when we get to heaven, we're going to realize that we were asking all the wrong questions, or we're asking the questions just a little bit wrong. Like the whole time we were asking, why is grace, instead of like, what is grace?
Yeah, right.
You know, things like that.
Yeah. That's a C.S. Lewis observation. I don't get the quote exactly, but he says the same thing. He said, when we get to heaven, he said, I think we're going to find out that we were asking the wrong questions.
Yeah.
That's what he says. He said, we're going to find out. He said, you know how like really small children will ask you a question like, you know, how tall is red?
Yeah.
You know, and it really makes sense to them. But as an adult, you're thinking, I don't think there's an answer. That's just a nonsensical question.
Right.
That maybe that we'll find out that what we're asking God, all these questions that we're going to go, why did I ask that? That was just...
And this passage speaks right to that.
Yeah.
This passage goes right to that. Realize that, oh, God's light doesn't just see the outside. God's light sees the inside too.
Yeah.
And that's just the crazy thing.
Yeah, right into his heart. And you mentioned this, you know, God is light. And in that moment, God's presence, which is light, is getting an insight into David's heart.
Yeah.
Right? That obviously Samuel is not seeing at all.
Right.
And you know, one little interesting note here, I again, it's not original with me, I read this, but you know, the presence of God, who is light and exposing some things or getting into some penetration, the author said, it's not just insight and penetration of vision into what David's true heart, but it's also exposing something in Samuel, because Samuel was about ready to make the same mistake that he made the last time.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, a big, young, strong guy. Let's pick him.
Yeah.
Which is how he picked Saul. Actually, I guess they say that the language here is almost identical to what what Samuel said about Saul.
Yeah.
He's taller than everybody else. He's handsomer than everybody else. It must be him.
Yeah, that's funny, because it seems like this seems to be a trend in Samuel's life, like from his calling, having to be called multiple times from the Lord. Like, the Lord has to say multiple things to Samuel.
Yeah.
And in this case, he's like, Samuel, I don't want to go down that road again.
Yeah, sir, we've already done this before.
We've already done this 1, 2, 3 times thing. Let's just, like, I'm just going to tell it to you straight. Like, don't look at this.
We got a Saul the last time.
By this time, the Lord just says, okay, we're not going to do this again. This is exactly how we're going to look for the person.
Yeah. Right. He just jumped in and said, no.
But you're right. It reveals even Samuel's flawed character.
Yeah.
In that sense.
And light is like that. And, you know, and light is grace. I mean, grace is like that, right? It allows God to penetrate into our lives and see us as we are, not to condemn us, but to bring us life and bring us into life. He's pointing that out to Samuel, because not to punish Samuel or embarrass Samuel. It's really to say, you know, Samuel, we're not going to go this way anymore. Right? We've already done this. And here's this young man, David. This young man is going to be our next king. Absolutely, it's a beautiful thing that's happening here to him. allowing the light of God to see ourselves as he sees us.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a beautiful thing about God's light, is that it's not just, and maybe isn't often, how other people can see me, you know, but how I can see myself and how God can see me.
Right.
You know, so like that's been a prayer for mine over the years, as you know. You know, it says another place in the Bible, in Jeremiah 17, I think, you know, the heart is deceitfully wicked, who can know it?
Yep.
There's a few passages like that in the Bible that basically are saying that your heart, which is another way to say your mind or your self-awareness, you know, our self-awareness can become very deceived and very like off, off. I think I'm great, you know, and the people around me saying, oh, I actually have a few flaws.
And even your, not just self-awareness, how you are aware of others, how you view others can be just off as well.
Yeah.
And in that same way, I've often asked the Lord to like, to remind me how he sees other people.
Yeah.
Especially when there's like something that like, you know, you don't get along with everyone all the time in life.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you butt heads, and I often pray, I'm like, Lord, help me to see this person the way you see them, because you love this person, you value them.
Yeah.
And that's like, I'm always having to humble myself in that way too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't just hold yourself so highly, you hold your opinion of others and wrongly as well sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to always just come back to the Lord and repent of that too.
Yeah. So it's God's light that does that for us. It exposes that in us, and we allow ourselves to be corrected by what, you know, what the light is exposing.
Man, that's grace.
Yeah.
That is grace.
And that's grace, right?
Yeah,
right?
That's grace.
And David's story. So eventually, you know, of course, if you know the life of David, and I know you do, you know, that there'll be other moments in his life when what God's light is showing him is how wrong he is,
and
how off he is, sinful, basically. And David now has grace to be able to respond to that, what the light is showing.
Yep.
Or I guess he could have hardened his heart and said, you know, I'm the king, man. Don't you know God? Don't you know who I am? You know, but
yeah, that's true. I mean, like he continually fails to the near end of his life. He's just messing up with relationships, with his children, with like just everything, right?
Yeah.
But he always repented, and he always received correction. And he knew what grace was.
Mm-hmm.
That's what made him different from Saul.
Yeah, right. I think so. That's probably the key thing, right?
Yeah.
That makes him really different from Saul. And I, you know, they say that because earlier in 1 Samuel, I think it's chapter 13, God says that of David, he was a man after. Or no, I think it's God says, I'm looking for a man after my own heart.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot, as they say, of ink has been spilled over what does it mean what did it mean when God said, he's a man after my own heart. Some people think that it may simply just mean that God was saying, I'm going to choose the person I want to choose. Someone who has my heart. I'm going to choose somebody that I want to choose. But you wonder, you know, and we're kind of getting out there a little bit, you know, when God can look into the heart of David, does he see the heart of a person who would repent? There's something, a character quality in him that he can see. Even when he's just a young kid, you know, this is somebody who has a heart, when broken, will turn to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So the light shows that, the light of God. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Hey, let's talk about the last story.
Sure.
Which is just another really good story. This one comes from the life of Jesus, and I'm gonna just begin with the first few verses of this story. So it comes from the Gospel of John, chapter 9, and we read there, as Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Neither this man nor his parents sinned, Jesus said. But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, Jesus said, I am the light of the world. So again, real strongly, he says it there that he's the light of the world. So here's what happens. They come across this man, a man that was had been born blind. Of course, the disciples want to know. Very common thing. In the first century.
He must have done something wrong.
He must have done something wrong, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's not just the first century, that's today, right? You know, something bad happened to you, you must have done something wrong.
Right.
And of course, Jesus says, no, that's not what's happening here. And okay, so to kind of speed the story up, Jesus heals the man.
Yep.
He restores him. He receives his sight. Now it happens on a Sabbath.
Right.
Right. You know, like that's a holy day for all the Jewish people. And so that gets in some trouble with some of the religious leaders. And so they want to investigate, right? You know, everyone's talking. There's a buzz going around. The blind man is now seeing, and so it's Sabbath, and they figure, you know, so they're figuring out this probably happened on the Sabbath. How did this happen?
Right.
And all of a sudden, some guy, you know, and the blind man doesn't know exactly, you know, who he is, and he ends up saying that incredible line. You know, all I know is I once was blind, but now I see.
Yep.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And now there's like thousands of songs written about it.
And now there's thousands of songs written with that line in it because it's so good. And of course, you know, they really want to nail this guy. You
know,
who did this? We need to know. How did this happen to you? And he says, I don't know. You know, then they pull the parents in. I actually think that there's some humor built into this story intentionally because, you know, they bring the because there's some debate over, well, maybe this guy was never blind, you know, and maybe there was no miracle today, so we're all it's all good, and, you know, they don't want to attribute a miracle to Jesus because that empowers him, and so then the talk was, well, maybe he was never blind, so they bring his parents in, and then they say, is this your son? Yeah, this is our son. How did he get his sight? We have no idea.
You know, it's funny, in their efforts to do no work on the Sabbath, they're doing so much more work by bringing in all these people.
That's right. I never thought of it. They got a whole trial going.
Yeah,
you know?
Like this trial is a lot of work, guys.
This is a lot
for
of effort.
Sabbath.
Yeah. On the Sabbath. And then, you know, so they know the parents, you know, when they realize, well, we're gonna, if we say anything here, we're going to get in trouble. So they just back off and say, he's old enough, you can ask him. And then they bring him back in for a second interview, and he says, I already told you, you know, what happened. He said, you know, he says something about Jesus, and then he asked them, you know, maybe you want to believe in him too.
Yeah.
And then you go crazy, right? And then it's all mad at him. You're like, ah, get out of here, you blasphemer.
That's true. Like that, you know. He poked him right there.
Yeah, yeah.
That
so,
awesome.
So, you know, and this is really a very, in some way, I want to say it's a simple story of healing. I mean, there's, for that blind man, there's nothing simple about it. I mean, he was blind and he got his sight. But it's very straightforward. You know, Jesus encounters someone in need and he brings healing to this man's life. Maybe it's the way the people are reacting around Jesus and to what's happened.
Yeah.
I mean, we can kind of, you know, the light has come and Jesus is the light. A man who was in darkness receives the light.
Right.
Literally, he can now see. But the people who said they were in the light appear to be actually very blind.
Right.
And still in the darkness.
You know, just it makes me think of the story of the prodigal, of the son who was not the prodigal. Mm-hmm. And like the people, it seems like the people who see grace being given out, they can't see it. Like when grace is extended out, it's quite often the people who are in the church or in the in crowd, how they have this like blinders to see grace. In the same way the father extended grace to the prodigal son, the older son was like, he couldn't see that grace.
Mm-hmm.
These believers, these churchgoers, these church runners, they couldn't see the grace that was being extended on Sabbath. They couldn't even see that Sabbath itself is grace from your 7-day work week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sabbath is grace from God.
Mm-hmm.
And so that when grace is being extended on the day of grace, they get all this incredulous. And I think that's a problem that like every believer has, even still to this day. Like, we have to check ourselves and say, this is a day of grace.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and they're trying to even correct grace,
mm-hmm.
which is so crazy.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
And it's still happening to this day. You get it from people all the time too.
Yeah, that's right. We don't always, it's ironic. I think I said this last week that the people who've received so much grace sometimes are the worst about extending grace to others.
It's unfortunate, but it's true sometimes.
Yeah. And these guys, the religious leaders, you know, they're not recognizing it. They don't see it. They're blind to it. It's like, you know, they have a little bit of the light, but in the presence of the real light and the fullness of light, Jesus, you know, it's like they have to struggle with, do I hold on to the little bit of light that I have and I'm comfortable with? Or do I admit that, wow, there's so much more light, I'm willing to embrace all of it, you know, and they don't do well here. They're in fact, they're just resisting more of the light.
Yeah. Maybe it's a control issue, maybe. I don't know. Like, some people just have, if things go out of their control, like, then they can't handle it. And you know what? Grace, you got no control over grace. Because God, if you live a life full of grace, God's going to send crazy stuff through your door and says, okay, this person is willing to reflect my grace and give more grace out.
Yeah.
God's willing to send more people your way.
Yeah, yeah. He's going to give you opportunity to give it away. Because he knows that about you. He knows the people who are willing to give the grace away, right? And the people who need it. And all right, so we're gonna wrap this up. And when we talked, we gave three stories and things from the Bible. We talked about Ephesians, and we said a lot, you know. And there are probably a lot of takeaways there. I'll just kind of draw attention to a few of them. And as we wrap things up, you know, and out of that Ephesians passage, we talked about, you know, how the way the moon reflects the light that comes from the sun, we are reflecting the light that comes from the Son of God. And every generation, every person then has to discover, you know, how do I live in the light in my generation? What does that look like? What does it mean to live in the light as a follower of Jesus in my generation? And certainly, you know, where light comes, it does bring a distinction between light and darkness. And where's that happening around you? And we talked about the great story from David and how he became king. And when God came into that story, he brought light.
Right.
And that light brought a grace to it, because this young man who didn't even get invited to the big moment with the famous prophet, but yet God had his eye on that young man. And he also was gracious to Samuel, because Samuel was about ready to make the same mistake a second time. So grace is like that. Light is like that, because it exposes. And once things get exposed, then we can respond to it. God doesn't want us to be hurt a second time, right? Or even a second time doing the same thing we did the last time. So that's light, and that's grace. And then we came back and ended with the story from the man born blind in John chapter 9. And he got his sight, and he ends up becoming a believer in Jesus. We didn't talk about that, but it was the people that saw the grace and were exposed to the greater light, and then
they struggled with it.
Yeah,
They even repelled from it.
Right. Even ran away from it. And, you know, all these things are happening in our lives. Even now, it's just the way we live life. And I love that about the Bible. It just speaks to us in the way that we live with God, and then we live life. Whether that's in Shanghai or whether that's in our home countries right now, because that's where we've been since Chinese New Year and we got stuck there, or whether we're students or married with kids or single, or you know, whatever we're doing, however we're living life, God is ready to embrace us out of the depth of the relationship that he has with us. And it's a relationship that's built on grace and a continual blessing of his light in our lives.